listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kurula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host of the most, Nikki Kurula. We're going to jump right into this interview. Tonight, we're doing it via StreamYard, and we'd like to introduce our wonderful guest extraordinaire, Mr. John Bach. How are you, dude?
Hey. What's up, man? Long time.
Long time. The last time I saw you, you were opening up for us at House of Blues, and you were just killing it on the drums, man. How is life? Are you still playing drums? That's my first question.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it looks like it's just in storage, but yes. I'm still playing with a handful of artists.
That's awesome. Are you doing like sessions at your house? Like, I always ask drummers because, like, you know, you have to have a drum set somewhere where you can just track stuff or, you know, you can rehearse, I'm sure, right?
Yeah. You know, actually, I never learned how to track drums.
What?
I mean, my dad's a broadcast engineer, ironically. And yeah, I managed to get through without ever touching a knob.
Well, let's go back real quick before we get into the chef stuff. I love backstories with anybody I interview, and you know, what was the moment of Zen that made you want to become a musician? What was the song or the musician or the band that made you want to become a musician?
You know, it was actually things kind of went backwards for me when I was a kid. My dad was actually learning how to play drums for his church. It was a very conservative, like Korean Presbyterian church. And they never had live music, just an organ in the corner and a small choir off to the side.
Wow.
And they decided they wanted to get hit. So they asked everyone in the congregation, all the elders, like, hey, who can play guitar? Who can play bass? Who can play drums? And, you know, there was someone that could play all the other instruments, but nobody could play drums. So my dad was like, I'll learn.
Wow. Really?
So he did. I mean, he took one lesson and he like figured out how to hold a beat.
And that's then, crazy.
Bought a drum set. Like it was in the living room. Like some old lady complained that the drums were too loud. So they just scrapped the whole thing immediately after one service. But there was this drum set in the corner and I was like 8 or 9 at the time. And so, like, naturally, I started just banging on him.
And drums are such a sexy instrument. They just look awesome, you know?
Especially as a little boy, right?
They must look huge to you, too. Just, like, giant drums that you can make noise. I mean, what's not great about that?
And you hit them, right?
Yes.
It started there, and I was never exposed to contemporary music, like, just for example, I didn't know that the stereo in my parents' car played anything except Korean Christian sermons.
What?
And classical music.
What?
Yeah.
Because that's all they listened to, I'm sure.
Yeah, that was it. And I started just hunting for music. And at the time, you know, grunge was the thing. You know, all the cool kids at school, they were listening to Pearl Jam and Nirvana and Soundgarden. I'm like, what is this? This is amazing.
Look at this. I'm wearing my Pearl Jam shirt, man.
There it is. And then, yeah, as I got better on the drums, it was just like a technical thing for me. And then I got better on the drums. Eventually, I started discovering the music that, you know, my friends were listening to. And then the people that I was listening to learning how to play drums, I listened to the music that they were influenced by. And then I didn't discover classic rock until I was probably 20.
Wow.
Which is around the time that we played, actually. That was like at least 15 years ago.
That is crazy. So, like, you must have just been like, first of all, Pearl Jam, Nirvana, I mean, great, great drum influences, great music, you know, influences.
Totally.
But must have gone back to hear Led Zeppelin and just been like,
dude,
oh my God.
I can actually tell you that. So fast forward to about 22 is when you can't turn the radio on or watch a movie without, you know, hearing Zeppelin or Beatles or, you know, the classics, right?
Well, they're like staples. They're just staples of the music world, you know?
So I recognized Stairway You know, I recognize all the cashmere, all of it. I'm like, oh, that old guy looks familiar, you know? But then, like, I had a friend of mine who basically introduced it to me properly and gave me a burned CD copy of Zeppelin 1 through 4.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's awesome.
That's when everything changed. And then that's when, honestly, I probably actually started becoming good.
Well, and it's also, it's like, he, to me, is still the best rock drummer of all time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
His pocket, his feel, everything is just like, it's so organic, but it also just feels greasy. It feels like technical, but it's not always, but it's like just the perfect amount of like technical prowess, feel, rock and roll, and soul. 100%. You know, it's all those things. So I always listen to a Zeppelin record. I actually use Zeppelin records as a reference for drum sounds.
So yeah. You can't go wrong.
Can't go wrong, because it's like, and it, you know what's also funny too? It's like, I always find that Zeppelin records to me always sound like the drums are so big, but surprisingly they're not that big. It's just his playing is so big. So like it feels like the mix is bigger because of how he plays, but it's actually not. Sometimes the drums are actually tucked way in the back, but he just is like firing on all four cylinders. So it just sounds like the drums are huge. So, you know, I kind of find that some of the mixes are almost mystifying, because if you turn them down or if you turn them really up, you'll find that the guitars are usually the loudest and the drums are not the loudest. I would put vocals as number two. So, what a great influence. Did you remember the first Led Zeppelin song you played to or learned?
When the Levy Breaks.
Oh man.
That's when everything changed. Yeah.
Well, did you go through the whole catalog and just learn?
Oh my God, dude. I mean, I actually, I'm still kicking myself for this, but I got to the point where I'm like, I am going to learn Moby Dick lick for lick.
Yes. Yeah,
I never did it.
Hey, but, you know, there's maybe still time. Day. There's still time, man. you know, it's funny. It's like, I'm going through a ginormous Hendrix phase.
Okay.
And Zeppelin and James Brown, but really a ginormous Hendrix phase. And I'm like going through all these songs and I'm like, learning as much as I can and learning as many little licks or little things. And it's just like when you realize all the details and all of these songs or all these guys playing, you're like, there isn't really enough time in life. You learn what you can, and that's the most important, you know. So I applaud that. So then what made you like start a band, or did you kind of start with cover bands, or did you just start working with original artists?
So I grew up playing drums in the contemporary Christian church, right? So, you know, like, it's like, it's so specific to like Southern California, I feel like, where it's like rock and roll church, right?
Right.
So that's where I grew up. And, I also, you know, my parents were, they were actually, trained opera singers.
What?
When they met, they were amateur at best. But they actually met singing in a choir together. So awesome. they hated the fact that I quit piano and started playing drums. They hated it.
Like, can't you just listen to classical music?
Yeah, exactly. So they said, okay, if he's going to play drums, he needs to know how to do it right. So I took lessons from the beginning for a really long time. And So I learned how to read, which I found out, you know, later when I moved to LA, that it was actually a pretty valuable skill. And I guess you can say I started my career playing for Christian artists, and more importantly, these massive like mega churches with like, you know, multiple piece choir or massive orchestras, big choirs and everything.
That's awesome.
Like
That's
very
awesome.
Traditional stuff. When I was about 25, 26, so about 10 years ago, I started playing for a televangelist.
Wow.
That's when I actually started making, you know, real money.
Right,
playing
right.
Playing music, playing drums, just as a drummer, you know?
It's funny. It's like there's so many great musicians in these churches. The churches always pay well. There's always a budget. There's, you know, it's like a different world for musicians. But, like, some of the best musicians come out of those kind of organizations. So
totally.
I love that you went that route. All right, go on.
So, yeah, I started there, and, you know, I realized that I had kind of, and without bragging too much, I kind of came, I was at the top
right
of that world.
Yeah.
And that's as pond. Far as you're I
like
can get.
You're like, I need to get to the next pond. That's how
so
it
I'm
is.
Like, I, you know, and I'm in my 20s and I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this for the rest of my life because there's really nowhere else to go except right. maybe linear, like go to a different church and do the same thing. So when I hit 30, I decided to leave that world. And you know, I met up with, or I started going back out into the scene in LA and Hollywood and like, you know, shaking the hands, you know, and like, you know, saying what's up and like, hey, I'm down if you want to jam. So I started jamming with a bunch of people. And then I started playing with my buddy, Nick Perry, a phenomenal guitar player. And speaking of Hendrix, the guy is obsessed. You guys wow. would get along famously. Oh,
I like him already, man. We share the same thing too, so it's perfect.
So yeah, we started a band. You know, we got a few other awesome players together. I got my friend Jameson in as a singer, and we signed a record deal pretty fast.
Wow.
With Concord, and things were going on the right track. And then you know, Common Tail. Everything kind of fell apart, you know, management and the label and all that, you know, all the drama that happens with, right. you know, all that happened.
Did you ever meet Joe McEwen by chance?
That sounds very familiar.
He was one of the heads of Concord. I basically sat next to him at a bar having dinner with him.
Oh, no shit.
And he was one of the VPs of Concord. So
yeah. I'll guarantee you he has no idea who I am.
Well, you know what? the funny thing is, most of those, like those, I always call them fat cats. Yeah. Most of the fat cats, they're behind the scenes, and none of the artists usually are meeting with them until they're crown jewel and they're there for those big meetings. But it's like it's all bullshit. So it's all right. Go on.
You know, it's like it's money. It's like you're pouring your heart and soul into this project and making a record that represents you as an artist, and no hard feelings. It's a product,
right.
To the label. And so, you know, it's almost an impossible situation. No one's going to be completely happy, you know?
Right.
So yeah, it all, you know, imploded. We decided to break up. And, at that point I was like, okay, what am I going to do with my life? Like I can try again, but honestly I was like, you know, like I felt like I wasn't, for all the time and energy and all the talent that is required to be at that level, I felt like I wasn't getting rewarded properly.
Right.
To be completely frank, you know? And I'm like, okay, so what do I have to look forward to? I can be a hired gun, which I'm not opposed to, but you know, for what I was looking for with for my life is and honest really just I wanted to be successful. I wanted to grow my wealth, but still be able to maintain my freedom.
Well, the biggest thing too, you want fulfillment. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
As basic as that is, it's like day to day, you want to feel like whatever I'm doing matters. You know what I mean? You don't want to feel like it's just like flailing in the wind for no reason. So I feel you, 100%.
And that's when the cooking came in.
Now, were you cooking like as a kid? Were you influenced by? I mean, obviously you're Korean. Were you all Korean, like cooking Korean barbecue as a family together? Were you learning little tips from grandma or from mom or dad? Like, how did that all influence your kind of you know knowledge?
It was all mom. Like mom was like was the chef with amongst all her friends. They were the ones that would you know learn from my mom and. You know, she carried on centuries old recipes. And I actually, so my mother passed away a long time ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I, you know, I picked up some stuff along the way and I found out later that my sister had my mom's recipe book.
Oh my God.
I didn't even know it existed. And then, you know, I started cooking, before I decided to do all this stuff. I started cooking and I called my sister. And she didn't want to give it to me.
Right? Like, she's like, no, you can't have it.
So long story short, I talked her into it. She was like 8 months pregnant at the time. So I kind of like just kind of snuck in and took it really. just to, you know, just so I know what I'm doing, you know? Then quarantine hit. And when that hit, I just went on a cooking rampage because, you know, I moved in with my girlfriend, who's now fiance, and she had a roommate who's like her best friend. And for quarantine, I came down, and then the roommate's friend came down as well. And they're all Russians, by the way. Like they just migrated here like maybe 10, 15 years ago. So it was like a Russian house. And then
you were eating pierogies all day long.
Yeah, just borscht every night. It was delicious. but you know, I had fun with it, and we were doing grocery store runs. I don't know. I'm sure everyone remembers this. We were doing once a week grocery store runs. That's it. Everybody was locked in the house. You couldn't go anywhere. There's nothing to do. Once a week grocery run. So I take I basically build a menu. I'd ask everybody what they wanted to eat. And we did sushi one night. I made pizza another night. We did tacos. We did, you know, just fun stuff. Like bar. We had a bar night where I just made like fried pickles and tater tots. Like
That's awesome. So you kind of were like always flexing the cooking like muscle.
It was always fun. And it was kind of more survival. Like I'm sure you remember these days where, you know, when we were in a van with like, you know, a few hundred bucks a week for everything, gas included. Yeah. And we're like, how do we take like our $4.50 a piece that we have and stretch it? So we're not just eating McDonald's like dollar menu every day.
Right.
So I would just get creative, and it, like I said, it's for survival. And then, you know, the short period that I was on a bus, you know, I had a hot plate.
That's awesome.
So that just expanded my horizon.
Right.
So yeah, that's kind of how it all started. And you know, we'd go on these little writing retreats where we just lock ourselves in a rented house for like a month just to write as many songs as possible. And I'd be the chef, you know, I'd cook food, all the meals for everybody.
Amazing.
And then during quarantine is when I dug in. I was watching YouTube videos of like all my favorite chefs, everything I can pick up, trial and error. And then it just kept getting better and better and better. And then of course, you know, everyone that would eat the food would be like, you should start a restaurant. You should do this for a living. And I'm like, that's no, I'm not going to start a restaurant. Like, I don't know shit about, I've never even worked in a restaurant, you know?
But those are sometimes the best chefs.
Yeah.
You know? So, and were you doing like Korean barbecue? Like, you're like, I'm a huge Korean barbecue fan.
Yeah.
So I love Daeji Bulgogi. I love Chapabegi. I love Bulgogi. I love it all, man. There's not anything. I even like the cow tongue. Like,
there you go.
All of it, man. It's just, yeah. There's like, I've had so many Korean friends in my life over the years, and they have shown me so many great spots. My brother is the first person to actually show me bibimbap. Okay. And I fell in love right away. I was like, what is this? This is like everything you need in a bowl. And he was like, oh, you're having the cold version. There's a hot version. I was like, you're rocking my world. This is crazy. So my whole family has been way into Korean barbecue. I can never get enough of it. I actually live in Koreatown. So like,
oh, cool.
I'm always going to Korean barbecue. First of all, I want to tell you, your food looks amazing.
Thanks, man.
I always tell people, I mean, I'm a foodie and just from the get-go, but you eat with your eyes first. You know what I mean? So it's like when your food looks good, you know it's going to taste good. You know, it's like that's 50% of it. When the food looks good, it's going to taste good. You know, so right away when I saw pictures, and I haven't tasted your food yet, but I already know it's going to be great because A, you have attention to detail just from being a musician, and B, your food looks incredible. So tell me, what were the kind of like obstacles that you had to have overcooked some meat at some point or made some mistakes where you charred some kimchi or something too much? Right. Like, what were those kind of like learning curves that you kind of hit?
I mean, you know, honestly, the hardest part was just consistency in the beginning where I do the same recipe every time. And then one time the bulgogi is way too salty.
Wow. Or,
you know, just something like that. And then it was a technique thing, and it was it's such a feel thing, man. Like, it's so hard to explain because
like music.
Exactly. Like, you know, before I was like measuring every drop of everything and every gram of whatever, but now I don't even, you know, I'm just like throwing it in, and I can tell like, oh, you know, like maybe, I don't know, maybe the weather has something to do with it. And I'm like, Like, I just feel like it needs a little bit more of this or that. And they just throw it all in, and it comes out perfect every time. Well, not perfect.
But yes.
It's not perfect to me, but
you know, it's like this, the reason I have this show is it's to showcase a spotlight on creators. And you're creating something. And you're creating a food experience that is out of the norm. Like, that's what I love about Korean barbecue. And I love taking friends to Korean barbecue for that reason, because it's like, I know most 9 out of 10 times they probably haven't had anything like it. And then once they have it, it's like, you got to love a culture where every table has a barbecue built into it. You know, it's like, you know, I had Korean friends and they would say that people's homes in Korea would have these barbecues. And I'm like, what? Like, you have a barbecue like built into your house, your table? They're like, yeah, that's like part of the culture. It's like, you grill all the time. You can't not like a culture that loves to grill out. So, or grill in, I should say. So did you kind of start kind of infiltrating some of that, or do you cook it all on a stove? Like, what is your technique from home to doing it from the chef's table to, you know, the everyday, you know, person to cater to their, you know, needs?
So this business that I started, it's per party, meaning like it's a different, it's catering.
Right.
So I prepare everything. I have a kitchen in the valley where, you know, and I'm still renting hourly, which is kind of great, where I don't have to have this massive overhead of owning my own kitchen and a whole space, right? So I go and I prepare all the marinades. I prepare all the little sides, the banchan.
I love that.
Yeah. And I have to time everything based on when the service is going to start. And then when I show up to the party, and they started off as really small dinner parties, I was doing like just a romantic night for two. I've done that a couple times during quarantine. I'll take everything, right?
Right.
I'll serve you. Like, if I'm free that night, I'll do it, you know? And then all the way up to probably the biggest thing I did was bar mitzvah for like 35, maybe 40 people. So I just bring all the meat marinated, timed just in time for the grill for the party. And I set everything up. I've basically hired my friends, to you know, help me and work for me and serve and, you know, set everything up. So I just set everything up on the table, and I have a portable, tabletop grill set up, that literally every, like you were saying, like every Korean family has this setup. Like, I kind of went fancy, and I got like the
gold plated stuff. You're making me hungry, man.
But I went kind of fancy for the aesthetics and got like the gold painted stoves and like the fancy ones, you know. But it's a Korean barbecue restaurant at your home or at your party or event.
That's such a novel concept too. It's like, you know, so many people are doing the brick and mortar or the food truck thing. Mm-hmm. And I like that you're doing like this catered experience, because that's not what you get every day. Do you do your own kimchi the whole bit?
I do.
Wow.
I will be honest. The kimchi was really hard to time properly.
Right.
I bought a very large and expensive kimchi refrigerator since then.
Wow.
Basically, it's not rocket science. It basically mimics the traditional way that we used to make kimchi, where you would bury it in the ground in like these,
they were like pits, right? They were like pits in the ground, right?
And, you know, you store it in there. And the reason you do that is because the cold and the lack of air and moisture will keep the kimchi locked in, where it'll stop the fermentation process without freezing it.
Right.
So I have this refrigerator that mimics that. Which most Korean family homes have, like, a smaller version. Almost every family has a kimchi fridge.
Wait, so did you have kimchi that was too fermented?
So, the problem was I never had enough at first. Okay. And I couldn't necessarily afford to make way too much. Because then what I got, like, you know, 5 gallons of kimchi that I have to, that what am I going to do with, you know? Even though I'm so, overaged kimchi you would use for soups, and like I'd make a kimchi pancake with like a
I love dude, my freaking favorite dude. Kimchi pancake. Let me just tell you, I love Korean barbecue. The kimchi pancake, I like it more than pancakes.
But like, yeah, it's just sweet, you know.
Level, it's on a whole different level, and when you mix it with like my favorite is like the kimchi pancake with one of the marinated beefs, either the pork or the beef, and that garlic bean paste. What is that called?
Oh yeah, it's samjang.
Samjang. Yeah. That stuff is like crack for me.
Dude,
so
it's that I've had so many people who had never done Korean barbecue before, and I warned them. I'm like, just so you know.
You're going to love this forever.
I got extra.
Well, and it's also, there's an art to the pancake. Like, there's a reason why when you go to an all-you-can-eat Korean barbecue place, they don't offer the kimchi pancake. It's all
you'll get, like, one little sliver. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And you do the steamed egg as well? The steamed egg is, that's
I used to. I used to. I have bought these grills that have, like, little moats on the outside.
Yeah,
and then I poured it, but then it just like the timing of it was always a disaster. Like it would always overcook or it'd be too raw, and everybody would want to get in. I'm like, don't, not yet. So I only do it if people ask for it.
And what's your favorite meat? Like, do you do short rib?
Rib all day. That's my favorite.
Short rib is the
100%. Yeah,
and you probably do you bibimbap?
I've done kimchi fried rice.
Oh man, that sounds so
for good. Service. Yeah, for service. Right. And so, you know, afterwards, if they want the kimchi fried rice, I bring cast iron grill pans.
Wow.
And you cook the meat on that, and then afterwards, you basically take the residue of all the meat, and you throw in some oil and some rice and some. Kimchi, mix it all up. It's the best.
Yeah, there's a place actually right by me on 6th. I'm sure you know the name.
Kanju Park.
Yes, that's it. That's it. And they do that at the end. And
it's like top three place for me.
Yeah, that place. I love that place, and I love parks too. That place.
Yeah.
But what I love about Korean barbecue is it's like it's all about seasoning. It's all about marinating. It's all about the meat. It's all about the sides. And you're getting like this perfect blend of vegetables and then salt, sweet, savory, garlic, spicy, you know, salads. You're getting all these like balances of flavors. Do you have a preference when you serve the sides? Is there like a group of sides that are your go-tos? I know kimchi is always one of them. I know potato salad is sometimes an odd staple that a lot of people Like, what are your sides that you serve that are, like, complimentary? Do you choose them based on the meats you're going to serve? Or, okay. All right.
So I used to do I was doing at first, and I guess in a way I was kind of overcompensating because I wanted to – I was a little insecure about my own cooking, and so I just gave them everything. I was like – there's, like, 7 or 8 little sides – and then I do like a whole thing of the glass noodles, the chapcha noodles, steamed eggs. I do the salad. I did everything. And then I realized, one, it was way too much food. And two, like I needed to pair things with the flavors. So I actually cut it down 4 sides of kimchi. I do the soybeans. The kimchi is going to be salty. It's going to be a little spicy. And that pairs well.
Isn't it marinated? I mean, fermenting in like a chili sauce? Isn't it the chili?
It's Korean chili. It's Korean chili powder or flakes, I should say. The cabbage is salted. There's a little bit of anchovy sauce in there. A little bit of baby shrimp, fermented baby shrimp in there that actually just kicks up the fermenting process. I do a whole like table side, like I cut it all up and like all fresh and plate it for everybody.
So hungry, dude. It's working. Whatever you're doing, it's working.
Yeah, it's been working. Like people have liked it. And the first time I had someone book me again, that's when I was like, okay, I'm fine. I know what I'm doing. Everyone's happy. Like, great.
So you said the bean sprouts. Do you marinate them in something, or is it just
the bean sprouts are fresh, pretty fresh. I make the morning of before the service. And yeah, it's super simple. It's just you blanched with a little bit of sesame oil and salt and garlic and some green onions, some scallions. Toss it around. You let it sit for a few hours, and it just pairs. So everything kind of pairs well with a specific meat or multiple meats. So like the kimchi that's salty and spicy would go well with like an unmarinated like pork belly.
Right.
And then the marinated stuff that's like, you know, the kaibi is a little bit sweet, a little bit more on the sweet side. That would go well with, you know, like I have a cucumber kimchi. It's like a sweet and sour cucumber kimchi.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also with that same, chili sauce, right? Mm-hmm. It's also in the same. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. That's my favorite side that I always go to first. I could just eat that. I could eat 1,000 little cucumbers in that sauce. I don't even like cucumbers like alone.
Yeah.
So it's very odd, but with that sauce and that, because you get the tangy and the spicy, it's just awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Go on. I don't want to stop you, man.
Well, it's fun. I mean, you can go on the website and you can see all the pictures and I have the current prefix menu that
I'm doing. Do you do the rice paper? Do you do the rice paper too?
Yeah, only if they ask for it.
Yeah, you know what? I'm kind of a purist. I'm not down with the rice paper for some reason.
Really?
I think it's good, but I think sometimes it gets in the way of the taste of the meat. So I like just the meat and veggies and just going to town on those little cucumbers and the bean sprouts and the kimchi.
Yeah.
And do you grill the kimchi? Because a Korean friend of mine showed me that people do that. They grill the kimchi on the barbecues.
Everything is just on the table. You're allowed. There's no rules. You can do whatever you want. And I've had people who are like, I can tell like they've done this before, you know, and they just grab the kimchi, throw it right on the grill. I'm like, all right, you're good.
Yeah. You're like, you know what's up. You know what's up. You just keep those kimchi pancakes coming my way. Now, let me ask you about the kimchi pancake, because I know my brother is a diehard fan of kimchi pancakes. So is my girlfriend, Bonnie. She that's her favorite, you know?
Yeah.
So. But that is not the easiest to make it come out super thin, crispy on the edge, and like super moist in the middle. You had to have burned many a kimchi pancake, which I'm disappointed the call didn't come to Nikki to take the scraps of the burnt kimchi pancake. But how did you learn that process? Because that, you know, pancakes alone are difficult.
Yeah.
Kimchi pancake is a whole other obstacle.
I mean, trial and error. I mean, you're totally right. I've fucked up so many pancakes in the beginning. Followed it to a T. I was like, oh, I'm using a measuring cup. I need to weigh the flour. Like, what am I doing wrong? And then it's just a feel thing. You know what I mean? Like, I just realized, like, I just put in as much, you know, batter as I need, and then I just start pouring in the kimchi water and then just add a little more water if I need it, and I can tell that it's right. And then my fiance, who's Ukrainian, like 100% Ukrainian blood, never thought in a million years that I'm sure she never thought in a million years that she would ever be able to cook Korean food. And I never thought I'd ever watch a Ukrainian girl cook Korean food. She,
right.
I can't touch her with a pancake. That's hers.
Wow.
She really? Knew exactly how she just nails it every single time. And, you know, I've gotten to the point where I'm pretty consistent, but I just make the batter and I give it to her. And
you're like, your Jedi skills with the kimchi.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
She's
the kimchi pancake master.
Well, it's like the batter is like, it's very unique to how great the pancake is. It's like, I've had good kimchi pancakes. I've had fantastic kimchi pancakes. And there is a very thin line between the good and the great. You know, it's
totally,
like, so it's like it has to be this perfect amount of, I think it's the consistency or it's the batter or it's even like the type of oil or even it's like the pan that has all the marinated meats that have been cooked on it that have been, you know, over the years that give it this kind of like seasoned thing. Do you have any kind of special weapons in your arsenal as far as pans or any kind of tools that you use that you're like, oh, this is always going to come out great because this thing
is the
jam?
I have, for, you know, kimchi pancake, I use, it's a, you know, like a commercial grade nonstick pan. It's like massive. But Yeah, I do. Speaking of tools of the trade, I bring a wok to service, and I finish the prep for the glass noodles, like at the home.
Okay.
And the wok is, I mean, I was going for convenience at first, and I just did everything in that nonstick pan. But you need the wok to really, like, you know, nail it. You get
well,
the
it's
sear
like
and then steam.
It's like so
and,
authentic. You know what I mean?
It's yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's, well,
it's a tool.
Crazy. Right,
you know, and it helps you accomplish.
It's because of the way it just. I watch a ton of cooking shows, not that I'm a chef, but like you know, I've been learning some Indian recipes from my mom because, like, during the pandemic, I was like, I need to know these recipes. These are a part of my culture. It's kind of the same way. I don't want to. I'm not about to open a catering business, but
dude, let's team up.
I'll show you a couple of things, but yeah. But honestly, it's really just because I want these recipes to live on, and I want also to be able to enjoy these things that I grew up with. I'm sure you're the same way, but it's like you learn, like there's definitely a learning curve, but it's also you feel more enriched that you had this cultural upbringing that
dude,
maybe
absolutely.
The average American kid or the average European kid just didn't have. So it's like you get, like, you know, back to your roots as far as like, oh, these are the, like, I don't know if you felt this, but this is what I felt as soon as I put, like, ginger, onion, serrano chilies, and you know, garlic in a pan.
It's
that
over.
That smell was like instant childhood. I was like,
"It's over."
Oh
yeah,
my God, this is how my childhood smelled all the time, like coming home to from school or whatever. And it was like, I mean, that feeling. I never thought that something like a smell would be such a character and sort of root to how I grew up. But I mean.
Yeah.
You must have had that experience when you were first dabbling with this. Tell me what that was like, and also the connection to your mom. It had to be super powerful for you.
Yeah, I didn't realize how intimate it is to cook for people.
Yes,
like literally, I mean, and I washed my hands before I did this, but every piece of food was touched by my hands, right?
Right.
Like every like I do a lot of the butchering myself. I mean, wow. I'm not bringing a whole cow home
right.
or a whole pig, but like I'll get a cut of meat, and I'll cut it like the way that I want it, and you know, which took a lot of practice, but it's so intimate because the food that these people are paying me to consume was prepared like carefully, and also because I'm not running like a big scale restaurant or like a food truck or something, which there's nothing wrong with. I've considered going that route. But because I'm just doing small dinner parties, everything I make myself, like from beginning to end, all the prep, all the washing of the vegetables, all the fermenting, everything from beginning to end is I do it with my own hands. So, people appreciate that and they can tell. You know, the love that goes into the food, you know, it's you know.
Well, and it's also like you're the chef.
Yeah.
It's very few and far between where you walk into a restaurant and the chef that you're eating the food of the chef's recipes is actually cooked by the chef. Usually it's cooked by assistants. So it's like I always have so much love for those people that are like, yo, this is the food that – this is my recipe. This is what I'm cooking, and I'm doing it myself.
Totally.
Something like it's like organic, and it's also you're getting it straight from the creator into your belly. So it's just like you. It's like what you said. It's like a message. It's like a story. So I have to ask you, and man, I'm gonna have to ask you to cook at some point because this is amazing.
Yeah.
But what do you start with? You start with the sides, like traditionally. Do you start with a small plate at first with like little meats? Like what's your game plan? Like, do you ask people what their allergies are? Like what meats they like?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, that's kind of the upside to doing small dinner parties is that I can make everything specifically, you know, for that party.
Right.
So I always ask food allergies, even if it's just a preference, you know, like I can do 90% of the menu, 95% of the menu gluten-free. And it's LA, so pretty much every dinner party there's a vegan or a vegetarian, or best case scenario, a pescatarian.
Right.
So I'll I'll, you know, take the same marinades that I make for the meat and, you know, use it to marinate mushrooms or tofu or, you know, or do just kind of make sure that they're included, which is really hard with Korean barbecue, right? Even when you go to the restaurant, like I did a whole keto menu, like a month ago, and I just replaced all the sweets, all the sugars, and all the carbs, like, you know, or, you know, anything that was not keto friendly, with you know, other sweeteners. And it was a bit of an experiment, but it worked out really good, and people really appreciate it. Especially, you know, I think a lot of times when like people know if they're like, I'm gluten free or I'm this or I'm that. People know that, like, you know, someone's gonna roll their eyes in the kitchen,
right?
But I think because I'm relatively new to the cooking thing, I don't really have.
Well, it's amazing they even cater to everybody's, you know, needs.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That's incredible. Usually it's like one dish, but the fact that it, like for the keto thing, you're like, okay, let me change the entire menu, cater this party that wants it all to be keto friendly. It's like, that is not easy to do, and there had to have been some trial and error with a little bit of that. But I mean, it's amazing that you even do that. That's a very big characteristic for LA people to hire you, because, like, you're basically saying, okay, what are your dietary needs? And I will make the menu based on that, which I don't know a lot of chefs that are down to do that. Because,
well, dude, that's the thing, man. That's the thing is, like, as a musician, as a drummer, like, I got rules. You know what I mean? Like, I've been doing this for a long time. I am not playing djembe. No fucking way. I am not playing that djembe. Hire some other kid, you know?
Right.
But with the cooking, like, I think part of it being a business venture where, you know, with similar when you're first starting out with music, you say yes to everything.
Right. Right.
So it was partially, actually, most of the motivation, to be honest, was so I didn't have to say no.
Right.
So they're like, oh, we want this, but like 8 of the 15 people are gluten free, and then 3 people are vegetarians, and then this and that. And I wasn't going to churn down the money.
Right.
So I took it and I figured it out. And, you know, I followed the proper, you know, health code, you know, guidelines to make sure everything is sanitary or like I had the first gluten free request I had. There was actually someone who wasn't just, you know, someone that just didn't like gluten. She literally had celiac disease.
Oh, wow.
If she, I sanitized the entire kitchen and every tool, ditched all the wooden utensils, used like stainless steel and plastic just so that I don't fuck it up.
Right.
And she was fine. She felt great, apparently, the next day. Awesome.
Well, I mean, and it's like that you're treading a line right there because.
Yeah.
It's like there are people in my hometown. There was a girl that died of a peanut allergy, you know. So you are dealing with these allergies that have become more intense. But it's amazing that you do all those things. Did you find that there was like also a learning curve with that, with trying to figure out how to accommodate or even just the planning? Because like you're preparing food for, let's say, 15 people. The times are going to be different based on the preparation to deliver everything. Yeah. How did you figure all of that?
It's just planning at that point, really. I mean, you just you have a game plan. It's like say that you get hired to play a wedding and they want you to do this specific version of Bill Withers or something. You know what I mean? And like they want to, and the bride wants to sing, so you got to go down a couple or go up a couple keys or whatever, right? And so you just have to plan it out.
Make it happen.
Yeah, and you just do it. And you don't want to do it sometimes. A lot of times you don't want to do it, but you know what? It's not your job to, you know, tell the bride that, you know, you're too good of a musician to do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you're going to take the gig.
There's always that, like, you know, you're in a service industry. You know this from being a musician. There was one time that we played a wedding and the bride and groom, who were friends of mine, they were like, hey, we want to walk down the aisle of What a Wonderful World. I'm like, okay, great, no problem. I'm like, just have the wedding coordinator tell me when you guys are walking down the aisle. So they had this like wedding coordinator that was like super anxious and just like really tough. And dude, she was like, okay, they're coming. We played What a Wonderful World for 64 minutes.
No. I thought you were going to say you just restarted it.
No, we just because like because they kept saying, "Oh, they're coming." So yeah. we literally played What a Wonderful World for 64 minutes, and I was just like, "This is why I don't love accommodating requests sometimes because it's going to turn into something that it never should have been." Like 64 minutes is a long time, but they were right out the door. And I could see them, so it's like, oh, they're coming. But then all these other people started, you know, processing before them, and then there was delays because somebody needed. It's just like all those things I'm sure have happened when people are asking you to cook for them.
Yeah,
how do you find that? Do you balance it with the number of people that you bring along to help, or do you find that you just know that you're going to have to do most of the work to deliver the product that you want to deliver to each customer? Like, how do you gauge the number of people that are helping you?
So I have a standard service that I provide. And I know exactly how many people we can handle for how many, and I've had to keep it minimal because of COVID.
Right.
Because, you know, you don't want to, if it's like a party for 10, you don't want to show up with 5 people.
Right.
You know, and then everyone gets a little, I mean, we're all masked up and everyone's vaccinated now, but I just kind of kept it standard. And then, you know, occasionally I'll get a curveball and, you know, the day before they'll, you know, either add 10 people, which is great because I charge by person. So I'm like, oh yeah, that's great. But then now I've got to scramble to figure it out.
Right.
Not that difficult to, you know, plan for the actual service. I did have one. I actually got asked to do a reality TV show.
Wow!
And you'll know. I'm not gonna say which one, but it's a big one that I actually didn't even know about until they booked me. And they paid like full price per person. It was like 45 people. Gave me like 50% deposit.
Yep.
Right. And then they even had chefs hired for me to use.
That's awesome.
Right. Whole thing. And, I for 45 people, I think it was about, God, it was in the thousands, like how much food I had to buy, like to prep. Right.
Right.
And I went, I bought everything and I brought it to the kitchen and I had some help for that day. I have a sous chef that I hired, and literally the moment I started making the first marinade, they canceled.
What?
The whole thing, they canceled. And I'm sitting here staring at all of this food that I didn't even care about the money. They ended up paying me for the whole thing, 'cause it was, you know, day of, which was awesome.
Yeah, but you still have all this food and you're
staring at all this food. Like, do homeless people like Korean barbecue? Because, like, I got to give this to somebody, right?
That's when you call your buddy Nikki and you're like, no, right? I got 45 plates of Korean barbecue and kimchi pancakes ready for you.
My friends. And you're like, no, I'm coming by myself.
That's right. Now we're speaking the same language.
Yeah.
So what did you do? How did you kind of, like, work around?
I actually kind of did a similar thing. I had a friend of mine who was free, and she wanted to, she ended up putting together a dinner party. And it was only like 6 people. And so I'm like, I reach out to the production, because it wasn't their fault that they canceled. It was actually the cast or the family or whatever you want to call it. They're the ones that at the last minute, they were like, no, we don't want to, we want to hire our friend, because they wanted to give the exposure to their friend.
Oh, that's so lame. I already can tell who it is.
I'm not going to say it.
It rhymes with Smartashian.
No, it wasn't that. I wish it was that big. Oh, my God.
You never know. Okay, all right. You have to tell me offline.
So it wasn't that one. But they wanted to hire their friend to give them the exposure. And then apparently the friend, the caterer, offered to do it for free. Because, you know, the production was going to pay for half of it, and the family needed to pay for half.
Right.
So anyway, the production was so cool. They paid the other half because the family refused to pay it. So they were so cool, and they went to bat for me. So I was like, hey, what are you guys doing for catering for this, for the film, or for the filming today? Do you guys want some Korean barbecue? And so I made everything. I cooked everything. I packaged it all up, and I sent it out to them for the production.
So smart. That's so smart.
Yeah, he left him like a stack of business cards this big.
Well, the other thing too, it's like, I'm sure your food tasted better. I mean, I just feel like food from like exotic parts of the world, you know, that just have like a defined, rooted culture, they end up tasting better. It's just like, it's the seasoning, it's the spices, it's the balance of flavors. It's also the history that makes it always taste better. So that's why I love Korean barbecue. That's why I love bibimbap. That's why I love Japanese cuisine. That's why I love Indian, Malaysian, all of these exotic cultures. They have such great flavors.
Yep. And,
you know, there's a balance that everything is so, like, I can taste something right away and know, oh, this is Korean. And I love it for that reason. I can taste something, like, there's a language with the food. Mm-hmm. So I love that you took that alternative, but you also probably made the other caterer look like amateur.
Oh. Term,
you know what I mean? Because,
dude, this is the best part. Oh, I should. I don't mean anyone any harm. But
no, that's okay.
It was just
that's
like
okay.
Instant karma. So the other caterer, because it was so last minute, ended up not being able to pull it off. So they had no food.
Wow!
And you're like, changed the whole thing.
That's crazy.
And then meanwhile, the production. I hope they were just eating all this.
Oh yeah, karma. I'm sure they're grubbing it up. Like, dude, we should have got this guy. This would have been the call. You know?
Yeah. You want to try?
Like, you know what? It's like. You know what? What's great is too. It's like when you're in situations like that, that's what people are going to remember. And you know, when you make something that good, the business speaks for itself. So it's like you will have more. I mean, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be one of your customers very soon. Because,
yeah, man.
I want to try your food because it looks amazing.
Yeah.
Does all of this make you want a brick and mortar or a food truck eventually or down the line? Or do you like doing it like this?
I almost pulled the trigger on it was going to either be a restaurant or a food truck. And I sought the advice of friends who are in the business. And almost all of them talked me out of it.
Wow.
Almost all of them. One of them, he offered to go into business with me. But he it would have been a partnership. And I realized like just the amount of work versus reward was, I just wasn't that passionate enough about opening a brick and mortar.
Right.
You know? And I got so lucky. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, you know, I had a great idea.
It's a grind. There's no question that brick and mortar, you have more expenses. You have more pressure. Yeah. I mean, you're doing it in a way that I think restaurants wish they could do it like, because you're gauging your groceries and your time versus the work and the budget. It's all budgeted correctly the way it should be. So, you know, when you're working and when to deliver and how much and what's going to make the profit. So it's like you're doing it the right way. That's amazing.
I'm not ruling it out, but, you know, right now, you know, there's still a lot of room to grow just doing it the way that I've been doing it.
Right.
And I really, I can't imagine just it being like an assembly line.
You know,
and maybe that's just like the sentimental
passion. Well, it's the intimate thing. It comes down to the intimate thing. And it's also like quality control. You're doing that. You're like, I know it'll be this good.
Mm-hmm.
I take care of it because it matters. I'm sure you've seen the movie Chef.
Oh, my God. I've watched it probably four times last
week. Yeah, so like when he's making the quesadilla and his son's like flipping it over. He's like, it's okay if it's a little burnt. He's like, come here. I care about this. I love this. It's just like music. So I know you're the same way. Where can people find you if they want to hire you for an event or they want to check out your food? Where can people find you online? Just give us all the information.
Probably. So I have a website, soulfoodkbbq.com.
And that's spell it out. Spell it out because people are dumb.
It's Seoul, like the city in Korea. S-E-O-U-L. F-O-D-K-B-B-Q.com. Wow, I did it. I didn't think I'd be able to spell it.
You almost misspelled food, though. I was like, oh!
So Seoul, as in Seoul, South Korea. And it's the same Instagram handle. And I have Facebook. I think I have a Twitter, but I never used it.
Yeah.
I'm a terrible business owner. but Instagram is probably the easiest to find. It's Soul Food KBBQ. at Soulful Kid BBQ. And, you know, I have pictures of some of the service that we've done, which also I need to get better at because I always forget to get photos. And then it looks like I haven't done anything.
You did something. You did like an outdoor event. It would look like a picnic, mm-hmm. like a park. And
Oh, yeah.
I remember seeing the pictures and it looked so freaking good. You did like Korean barbecue spare ribs and you did all, I mean, it was just slamming. So I want to do this and I'm going to reach out to you and
dude, absolutely.
Because I love Korean barbecue. I want to support you because I think you're great at what you do. And I think more people will check out your website. This is my last question. Now, with things like Yelp or food reviewers, there's so much politics that goes into that, as I know you know. Is it tempting to play that game, or are you just like, you know what, I just want to focus on the food and let that do the talking and let everything else just kind of fall by the wayside?
I've been extremely lucky where, and for any kind of business, or any, even as an independent contractor, like a musician, the word of mouth has exceeded what I can handle.
Right.
And so for now, I'm holding off, but it's I think it's time to at least get the Yelp fired up just so I don't have to do any convincing.
Right.
You know, when someone gets a hold of me, and just let that be. And, you know, even if I'd like to see a bad review, to be honest with you. Like, I mean, it might not be good for business, but, you know, something I learned doing music is that, I remember the first time our music video for the band, the last band that I had, went on YouTube, and, you know, we broke, you know, 100,000 to 300,000 views, and we got our first bad comment, right? Our first, like, this is crap kind of, you know, like insulting comment. And my whole band, they were like on the ground. They couldn't even, they were destroyed when they saw the bad comment. But then I was like, it sucks. It hurts. But now I know it's real. Now I know we're not in the world of mom and aunt and uncle and cousins.
Very
like,
true.
Commenting like, oh.
You don't know you're succeeding until you actually get the haters.
Right. And someone that's just like, I didn't like it. And fuck you, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So it's like when you get the haters, that's when you know you're close.
Yeah. And I know, you know, what's funny is like my restaurant owner friends, it kills their business because if they get the one star, like it actually does hurt their bottom line. Which so I'm speaking like I know I'm kind of talking on I'm talking on a fine line here. Like I don't actually probably want it, but you know, want to like if it happens.
Yeah.
As an artist, I'd be happy, you know.
Well, John, you've been a wonderful guest on our show, Wake Up Hollywood. We're excited to see what more things you come up with in the food world, and we wish you nothing but success. And you already have a customer in the future with me, so we're going to make that
over.
Happen.
Yeah, come yes, over.
Let's
yeah.
do it. Yeah. And thank you for sharing all your expertise and all the backstory about the history with your mom's recipes and everything. You're going to have to show me a peek of your mom's recipe book because that's just going to be cool. A cool little thing that I can one day maybe tell your sister, oh, I saw that recipe. It's amazing.
I actually gave it back to her. So.
Oh, okay. Well, that's your good soul.
But I took everything else.
You know what? I'm excited to taste your food and, we wish you nothing but the best, man. And thank you for being a guest on Wake Up Hollywood.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. On behalf of Sam, myself, and John, check out soulfoodkbbq.com, right?
That's it.
All right. And we'll see you guys next week. Thanks again for tuning in. And get your grub on. Right, John?
Yes.
Yeah. Bye for now.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.